Start recording. Thank you. Wonderful. Welcome into a hybrid meeting. Most of us are used to hybrid meetings by now, that in-person and Zoom world, or Google, or some form of being able to capture people who are present in the space and then those who are in the virtual arena. So thanks for being in this meeting. Here are some protocols to go through. You can read them. I just want to highlight a few of them. It's so important that in this moment that we have our cameras on when we're talking, that we have our camera on and that our mic is on and that we're speaking clearly and even at a good pace. Being careful not to speak too rapidly or too slowly helps us to be able, whoever's listening, to be able to capture what you're communicating. So be thoughtful as you communicate. Also, make sure that you're on mute when you're having conversations that are side conversations or that you're interacting around something else, because it bleeds into the moment and makes it difficult to capture voices when others are speaking. The way the systems are created, they're trying to capture everyone's voice, so there are multiple people speaking at the same time. It makes it difficult. It's helpful if you introduce yourself when you're speaking so that people know who is communicating. For those of us who've been a part of the Bond Oversight Committee, we're very familiar with one another and each other's voices, but everyone else is not necessarily so. So if you'd be thoughtful to do that. And then lastly, utilize the chat. Take advantage of the chat for tech questions and for those who are participating through public testimony. So thank you very much. And if we could have our next slide, I'll go over what we're doing today and then I'll do roll call. So I've introduced myself and let you know who I am. There will be a moment for public testimony. Many of you have heard me say this before. This is a meeting that is open to the public. It is not a public meeting. And what I mean by that is it is not a meeting for the public to come and share their concerns, thoughts, ideas about a variety of topics that aren't related to the specific agenda items or that aren't related to Portland Housing Bureau work. So public is invited to participate, listen in, observe, and share in regard to the work of the Bond Oversight Committee as it relates to the Portland Housing Bureau. So if you have testimony, you'll have an opportunity for 2 minutes, and we'd like you to have that testimony directed about items that are on the agenda. If you have concerns that are not necessarily on the agenda, it isn't that we don't want to hear from you. We encourage you to interact with the Portland Housing Bureau staff. And so if we could go away from this particular view for a moment and go to gallery view. You see everyone's face. Technology is great when it works. Is there a way to get a gallery view so we can see everyone? So I can identify the staff members who are in Portland Housing Bureau. Wonderful. Thank you very much. So all the Portland Housing Bureau staff, if you can have your cameras on, please. Amazing. Thank you, thank you, thank you. So if you have questions and want to engage around items that are not on the agenda, we encourage you to reach out to the Portland Housing Bureau staff. You saw several of them wave. Thank you very much. While we're still in this view, we will do roll call. So, of the Bond Oversight Committee members, I'll begin with you, Alan.
Thank you, Dr. Holt. Good morning, everyone. I'm Alan Lazo. I use he, him pronouns, and I am a Bond Oversight Committee member.
Thank you, sir. And then Susan, good to see you.
I'm Susan Emmons. I use she, her pronouns, and I'm a Bond Oversight Committee member.
Thank you very much, Todd.
Good morning, Todd Strubel, he, him pronouns, Bond Oversight Committee member.
Thank you very much. We can go back to the presentation view. Awesome. Our agenda is as you see. We're going to have some updates from our bond, and then we're going to talk about the bond finance update. Then there's a project team presentation, the future conversation of the bond oversight committee, what's going to happen, and then we'll have some closing remarks. We may have a moment to be introduced to the new Bureau Director. Bureau Director has been selected and brought in, and provided she has an opportunity to get in to the meeting, we will get a chance to be introduced to our Bureau Director. With that being said, let's go to the next slide, public testimony. To sign up in person or in Zoom chat, you're given an opportunity again for verbal or written testimony, and there's a 2-minute time limit. Do we have anyone in the space signed up for testimony? And I don't know who I'm asking that question to, but.
I don't believe so, Dr. Hull, although people may have signed up since I check the registration report. So if you do, if you would like to provide testimony, maybe raise your hand.
I'm not seeing any hands raised, are you?
Nope, we're good here.
Wonderful, and we will continue in our agenda. So our first item then, are the Portland Housing Bond updates. And I believe that is Danielle Norman.
Yes, good morning. Thank you, Dr. Holt. Good morning to the Bond Oversight Committee. I'm on the room mic, so I just wanna check. Can you hear me okay? Yes, okay, wonderful. I did want to introduce myself to those of you that who I have not met before. Danielle Norman, I am transitioning out of the role of finance coordinator and underwriter and into Jill Chen's former role as the manager of the housing investment and portfolio preservation team. So I'm very excited to be stepping into that role. And I'm here today to provide the updates that Jill would usually have given on just kind of the status of our projects and the overall picture of our bond progress. So next slide, please. So I believe you're all familiar with our progress map. Just to give a quick recap, of the $258 million invested by taxpayers, all funds have been allocated at this point. We have exceeded our goal of unit count by 43%, and we'll be creating almost 1,860 units with more than 1,200 units that are currently open. And the total count includes 774 deeply affordable units for households earning up to 30% AMI, 399 permanent supportive housing units with additional resources for services, and 835 family sized units. We have three projects currently in construction. Those are Alder 9, Francis and Claire Place, and Hazel Ying Lee Apartments, which is formerly known as 3000 Powell. And Hollywood Hub is still in pre-development with closing anticipated this fall. Next slide, please. Just to go into a few considerations and issues, we know there's a continued need for closer alignment with OHCS to ensure that the projects in our pipeline are recognized as our local priorities for resource allocation. For the Portland Housing Bond, this is mainly impacting Hollywood Hub, which did not receive a private activity bond reservation and therefore does not have 4% low-income housing tax credits. This project has a very complicated schedule. There's a lot of intricacies with sequencing between TriMet's work on the MAX station updates and Bridges housing project. So we're trying very hard to keep it on track with its scheduled closing of this fall 2024. We have been in touch with OHS staff for advocacy to try to move this project forward. And our current understanding is that they do recognize it as a very important project for both the city and for TriMet. Our understanding is that they're working towards a potential award this spring that would allow the project to stay on track. Other issues of note, cost escalation and interest rate hikes have been a real challenge over the last couple of years. that's not expected to impact that Portland Bond, the remaining Portland Bond project significantly. Hazel Yingli and Francis Sinclair Place are both set to complete construction within the next few months. And in terms of Hollywood Hub, we've been underwriting and looking at the project with a goal of making sure there's enough contingencies and we're setting our assumptions correctly to ensure that the project can close and complete construction successfully. We are aware of continued operational issues that are placing some stress on the projects that are in, have been leased up. Things like really large increases in insurance costs, issues retaining property management companies, and the high acuity of PSH needs at our projects. So I don't have answers on all these at the moment, but it's something that we're tracking and having active conversations on to ensure the health of the portfolio. And then we will be looking ahead to close out of the Portland housing bonds as we track through these last few projects. Next slide, please. These next few slides are just an overview of the specific projects. So I think you're all aware of the fact that we had five projects that opened in 2022, Crescent Court, Cathedral Village, the Starlight, High Utilixim, and Las Adelitas, totaling 583 affordable units. In 2023, there were four projects that opened. Emmons Place, and congrats to the project team. I understand the grand opening is scheduled for Monday and we'll have a presentation later in this session about the project. The Aurora, Anaman House, and the Joyce, totaling 431 affordable units. And next slide, please. Looking forward to our last four bond projects. Hazel Yingli is targeting May 2024 for its temporary certificate of occupancy. Again, that's 206 units, including 30 PSH units. Francis and Clare Place, which is 100% PSH, 61 units, is targeting July 2024 for its TCO. And Alder 9, which is 159 units of intergenerational housing, it was initially targeting fall of this year for TCO. That has now slipped to approximately August of next year. They had some challenges getting out of the ground in terms of some unexpected challenges related to soil and foundation, but the project team reports that the budget is being managed very well to sort of accommodate for that slippage. And then Hollywood Hub, which is the largest bond project at 222 affordable units, of which 149 are funded with the Portland bond, is currently in pre-development and targeting September for closing, provided that we can continue to work with OHS to make sure the resources are available. That's it for me. Any questions?
Thank you very much. That's exactly where we're going. We'll just go through each bond member one by one. And we'll begin with you, Alan. Any questions or comments?
Oh, thank you, Dr. Holt. Thank you, Al. I just have a question. How far, what's the funding gap for Hollywood Hub? Would the funding from OHCS, like you said, Alan, would it allow it to close?
Yes, I don't have the number off the top of my head. However, it is a large portion of the project budget because what they need is the private activity bonds and the 4% housing tax credits, and the equity from those credits is a very significant piece of the project budget. So there's not really a path forward for the project to close without those resources. It's our understanding that the state's committee that kind of oversees allocation of the private activity bonds has a meeting scheduled for April. So we're working on making sure that PHB is communicating with OHS about how important this project is, trying to advocate ahead of the project. All messaging so far has been positive with the expectation that OHS is trying to do what they can to make this come together.
Thank you.
Yes.
Susan, any questions or comments?
What's the address of the Hollywood Hub?
I don't know the exact address. It is right by the Hollywood Transit Station.
It's
where the, I apologize, I don't know the address, but it's, it was the Target that just closed and sort of across from the Trader Joe's.
Yeah, I know where that is. I've been a little bit out of the loop. So that's a great location, transit oriented and stores and yeah.
Yes, it is.
And who's the, is there a developer, a potential owner?
Yes, it is a bridge housing project.
Oh, okay. Thanks.
You're welcome.
Todd, questions, comments? Thanks, Susan.
It says the unit, are these unit counts or the number of people housed? Because I noticed the numbers didn't quite line up and there's that asterisk, 149 of 22. Yeah. Can you explain how the Metro bond is interfacing with this?
Sure. On this particular slide, it's the number of people anticipated to be housed. The actual units in Hollywood Hub specifically, it's 224 units, of which 222 are affordable, and then there's two managers units. And then 149 are funded with the Portland Metro Bond, and that leaves, I think, 149 are funded with the Portland Housing Bond, 73 with the Metro Bond, so that there's no sort of double dipping between those two sources.
Thank you very much. One other question that I have in terms of the Hazel Ying Lee, was there a naming moment that happened that I just completely missed? Maybe that's just on me, just wondering.
Apologies, I actually don't have very much background on the naming. It seems like it happened within the last few months. Yes, it happened probably within the last couple months, and I sent a notification to the Bond Oversight Committee members letting you know when that happened. So I don't have the exact date in front of me, but there was a notification that went out.
Wonderful. Thank you very much. Yeah. Thank you very much. Thanks for the report. We will move forward on him, I believe, in relationship. Yeah.
We have Helmy has joined us. So this might be a good opportunity for Helmy to say hello and introduce themselves and to the committee members.
Fantastic.
Great. Hello, everybody. Good morning, Dr. Holt and committee members. Really glad to be here. So I'm Helmy Hisrick, the new director at the Portland Housing Bureau. And I know that the bond funds are expended and the work is underway, and I'm coming in at the tail end of all of this. So congratulations to all of you for the hard work you've done with the bond, and I've heard nothing but positive reviews about the work that was done with the bond. So, I am really looking forward to seeing the projects come out of the ground and also to meeting each of you individually, because I think if you're sitting on a oversight committee, you are really an important stakeholder in the housing conversation in Portland. And I look forward to talking with each of you. And I'm happy to share a little bit about myself. Prior to coming here to Portland, I'm a person who's worked in the public sector for many years. I've spent 25 years working in the city of Los Angeles in a variety of roles. I ran several TIF districts in Los Angeles, and then I moved over. I was the deputy mayor of housing and homelessness under Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa in the early 2000s. And then I spent a large number of years, about 12 years, overseeing the housing development program in the city of LA. And I'll share with you what sort of prompted me to come to Portland, because you probably wonder, with somebody who's spent so much time in LA, why come to Portland? What's the pull or the draw? First of all, it's a beautiful city, so I'm really, really delighted to just be in the Pacific Northwest and to be here. But in about 2015, I started to see that the system that we have in place for solving housing crisis is not, it actually won't work. It's incapable of solving the housing problem. And I started to explore other ideas. Specifically, I was awarded a fellowship that allowed me to look around the world at housing systems that were working. And I left the city of Los Angeles to join a firm that was doing educational programs for housing leaders on world's best practices. And I was particularly interested in a model of housing in Vienna, Austria, really looking at the housing ecosystem there, how they do what's called social housing. It's quite extraordinary. They have a very broad housing supply, both for lower income households, but also for middle income. They provide a really stable housing for middle income. And so I've spent a lot of time researching and focusing on that. I actually have been an educator for the last 2.5 years, taking delegations of people to Vienna. For personal reasons, I decided it was time for me to stop traveling quite so much. And when I saw the opportunity to come to Portland, it really was a couple of thoughts. One is that it was, I've worked for so many years implementing. It's one thing to be sort of talking about big ideas. It's another thing to actually try to make them happen, try to bring ideas to new places. And so I really wanted to kind of flex my implementation skills again. And then secondly, I was just looking for a city that would be creative and thoughtful, that was kind of willing to do or think outside the box and is really on the move. And I could really sense that Portland is deeply committed to resolving the housing issues and particularly the homelessness crisis, and was open to a dialogue about the future. So that was what brought me here. And I'm really, really looking forward to getting to know folks. I'll just say I have a lot of knowledge on the housing sector, but I'm getting to know the people and the places of Portland. And so I welcome anybody's input on how best to engage here locally and really, really listen to those of you who've been actively involved in housing. So so that's who I am. And that's about it.
Well, thanks, Helmy. Great introduction. Appreciate that. I would like to give a moment to each of the bond oversight committee members, if they want to either ask a question or respond. And Susan, I'll start with
you. Yeah, welcome. I'd love to spend some time with you. My husband and I were lucky enough to spend 1 year living in Vienna. We worked for international organizations and really were impressed with the housing. And then we had twin sons the year that they were four, we went back. So that really is an interesting model to look at. There are underlying values in that culture that I don't believe we have in our culture. And so we had volunteers, board members who offered to send me out to study social housing in other cultures. And I thought, it's a great opportunity, but you have to live somewhere where people believe that. And so I'd love to discuss that with you, but welcome. Yeah, I think we're lucky to have you. And there is a lot of opportunity here. We have a lot of challenges. So yeah. Good to have you.
Thank you, Todd.
Hi, hello, welcome as well. Appreciate making the time to be here. I don't have any questions. I guess I just have a little bit of background. I think I was appointed to this oversight committee by the late Commissioner Fish, and I think part of the idea was representing the voices that are east of 82nd Avenue and 205. So I guess I would just kind of share that. I think that is an area of interest for me personally and a lot of the groups that I work with at Apano in East Portland. So just try to reiterate the advocacy for the folks that have are a big part of the city and a little bit farther away from downtown. Thank you.
Thank you.
Alan.
Thank you, Dr. Rowe. Welcome, Helmy. It's great to meet you. Thanks for the introduction. I know that we only have like an hour and a half left in our meeting, but I'm really curious about the statement that you made about why our current housing system isn't working. Is there a kernel that you could, that at the root of why you think that you could give us just in the next couple of minutes? Otherwise, we'd spend the next hour and a half talking about it. So
there's an analogy I like to use that I think is helpful, which is related to COVID. When the COVID crisis first happened, we all focused on the first responders. We were, you know, remember we were out there, I don't know if it was as much in Portland as in Los Angeles, but we were banging pots and pans and, you know, celebrating the nurses and the doctors and the firefighters and everyone who was on the front lines of COVID. But what we weren't really focusing on was the fact that there was a whole team of people working on a vaccine worldwide, that there was this sort of worldwide conversation taking place, getting rid of patent laws, really changing things and thinking differently about how to solve that problem at a scale, you know, at a scale. If we had only ever focused on the first responders, we would still be in a COVID crisis. And I think it's very much the same way in housing. We have a tendency to focus on homelessness. That is the human crisis that we are, you know, clearly our attention needs to go there and focus on that. But if we only focus on that, we are never actually going to address the fundamental root causes of housing crisis. Most people are homeless because there's not enough housing that is affordable. And so really looking at the overall housing supply and understanding that we actually need to create a team of what I call the vaccine team, or a group of people that are going to think a little bit more about the system itself. And that's actually why I looked to Vienna, because Vienna did that. You know, they had a homelessness crisis 100 years ago with about 60,000 people living in makeshift shelters in the city. And it was a response to that, creating a large supply of middle-income housing, also housing for the poor, for people that are impoverished, but it was really for working people and middle people that they're focusing in on. And that their ability to really create a supply of stable, permanently sort of protected from market fluctuations, housing has really stabilized that city. And I think that's the conversation that will help us think through a larger strategy. So that's kind of my thought process on housing, is how do we talk about, you know, how do we talk about the larger system while at the same time responding to the human crisis that we see with houselessness?
Thank you so much. Yeah, I'd love to talk to you. You're speaking my language on upstream solutions and systemic patterns. So
great.
Great. Thanks, Helmy. Good to meet you and appreciate it. Look forward to the engagements going forward.
Yeah, and thank you all for your service.
Thank you. If we can go back to the agenda, and we're going to get our bond finance update from Angel.
Thank you, Dr. Holt. Next, thank you. For the record, my name is Angel Landron Gonzalez. I'm the finance and accounting manager for the Bureau. My pronouns are he, him, and I'm Latino. As Daniel has indicated, at this point, the bond funds are fully committed. And the expenditure report highlights as of December of 2023 are the following. The expended versus committed amounts have continued increasing on ongoing constructions compared with the previous quarter's report. The expenditures are $211.3 million, where the project spending has increased by $10 million, or 5.2%. The committed funding for this period is $50.4 million, decreasing by approximately the same amount of $10 million, or minus 16.7% compared to last quarter's report. After that, I get it back to Dr. Holt.
Thanks, Angel. Appreciate it. Questions or comments, Todd?
Nope, nothing for me. Appreciate it. Is this the first, I guess, first question? We do have a question. Is this the first graph or table that we've seen where everything is 100% committed or expended?
No, I think during the last two or three reports, everything has been committed. What we have been seeing is that the amount of committing is been decreasing as soon as we are continue spending it.
Okay, great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Susan?
Yeah, I don't have any questions. Thanks.
Thank you. Alan?
No questions from me either. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thanks, Angel. Appreciate the report. Pretty straightforward. The committed dollar, the committed dollars are becoming the expended dollars as the projects are coming to completion. It's good news. Our next item on the agenda is our project team presentation around Emmons Place. Project team. And I don't have a specific name of who's leading this portion.
We have Destin and Baker here to present. You unmute yourselves, or Jen, can you unmute them? We're getting there.
Good morning, how are you all today? Thanks for inviting us to share about the Emmons Place development. My name is Baker Lyon. I'm a project manager with Northwest Housing Alternatives, and I'm joined by Destin Ferdun, our Director of Real Estate Development. Thank you to the city and the voters who put more than $19 million into the Emmons Place development, which we completed over the last year. That created 146 affordable units in the Northwest Alphabet District. This is the completed building here on 18th between Hoyt and Irving. Thank you also to one of your colleagues who lended her name and inspiration for this development here. The building you see on the right there is the Emmons Place South building, which provides 48 units of permanent supportive housing for seniors and case management services through the supportive housing services measure. Those services are provided by Northwest Pilot Project. And then on the left-hand side of your screen, the taller building is a workforce building, six stories, that was completed just about 2 months ago. If you wouldn't mind advancing the slides. And feel free to jump in with questions, comments, thoughts at any time. And the same for Destin, if you want to jump in. Feels free. So Northwest Housing Alternatives was the sponsor and developer of this project. We're working with our partner, Northwest Pilot Project, who is providing the case management PSH services to the residents of the South Building. Northwest Housing Alternatives also has a resident coordinator that works on site with all of the residents of both buildings. And then we've got a great partnership with both Lyft Urban Portland, who's providing food security services there at the building, which has been wonderful to learn more about their programming and see them using the community space there and creating lots of events and great relationships with the residents. These buildings were constructed by Bremmick Construction. They were designed by Carlton Hart, and they are managed by Income Property Management. As I mentioned, the buildings came online over the last year, and the South Building, the PSH building, is fully occupied at this point, save for maybe a couple of units in turnover. And the North Building is 50% occupied now. We're looking forward to celebrating at the grand opening event this coming Monday. Would you mind advancing the slides? So this is 146 units of new housing. It's all studios except for two staff units, one staff unit per building. The bulk of the units are 30% AMI units. There's 78 of those, of which 48 include permanent supportive housing services fundings, and then also vouchers from Home Forward to support those residents. The remaining units are at 60% of AMI, or restricted at 60% of AMI, and are targeting more of a workforce population. They are in the North Building there. We have some great amenities in this building, including a nice outdoor courtyard in the South Building, on-site laundry facilities in both buildings, bike storage, community rooms, and lounge. And then the on-site resident services from NHA and Northwest Pilot. This was an exciting development with a long history. It took the existing building in the middle, that white building that you saw, which is about a 100-year-old Buckbreaker building. We did an adaptive reuse of that. We built the addition on the south to create the new south building. And then the building on the left is completely new construction, ground up as well. And the team at Carlton Hart in Brown did a great job of achieving Earth Advantage Platinum, so really energy efficient building. All of these units have energy efficient heat pump heating and cooling. The location is just amazing in that it's got not only a lot that you can walk to in terms of groceries and services and other needs around it, but has a lot of transit as well. The Carlton Hart team did a great job of universal design and also trauma-informed design here at the building. Some examples of that include, you know, the choices of colors within the building, calming colors, the use of natural wood in a lot of the common areas. They brought in natural light where they could, particularly to the hallways, and made sure that the hallways had a lot of wayfinding kind of and orienting aspects. Like in the south building, the corridors wrap around that central courtyard. So you always have a view into the courtyard, which is nice, but it also helps you understand where you are in the space and where you're going. Let's see. And then there were a lot of thoughtful acoustic treatments too. We did above code treatments between the units to try and keep noise down. And then in the common areas as well, have some acoustic panels which try to make those spaces quieter and more useful as well. Next slide, please. So in terms of, as I mentioned, the south building is leased up and the north building is 50% occupied at this point. So we're in the middle of our lease up on that north building. The south building being PSH, all of those referrals came from the joint office and their coordinated access list, and in collaboration with Northwest Pilot Project and other area service partners that were referring and working with the residents as they moved in there. And then so in addition to that, on the north building, we've been working to outreach to BIPOC communities through a number of different means. Those include outreach to, you know, a long list of partner agencies that NHA works with, having open house on site and making the building generally available to interested parties, to their case managers, to anybody that's walking by. We've tried to do outreach through culturally specific newspapers and media to reach people speaking other languages than English. We've been doing in-person canvassing, really amazing work by the property managers there on site, getting out in the neighborhood, getting to know businesses, just walking the neighborhood, handing out information to try and catch people that might really benefit from a good place to live nearby. And then prior to all of this lease up work, we tried to incorporate feedback and input from both our NHA Resident Advisory Committee, who represents residents across our portfolio from a variety of backgrounds and experiences, and then also working with NAIA and Northwest Pilot to get feedback on what Worcester residents might need in terms of really in terms of culturally specific things, but general design for aging and formerly homeless residents as well. Next slide, please. Here are preliminary demographics for our residents. As I said, we're still in the process of leasing up, so you can see kind of where things are falling in terms of who has moved into the building. not represented on these two charts here. We do have about, our residents have an average income of about $13,500. 67% of our residents are disabled. 15% of the residents don't have any income, thanks to the Home Forward vouchers that's been made this an opportunity for their housing. And then lastly, 8% of residents identify as Hispanic. Next slide, please.
What, can you say that one more time? What's the percentage that are identify as Hispanic?
8%.
8%. Okay, thank you.
Yeah. A little bit about our contracting, which was led by the Bremick team. We were able to achieve over 33% in our hard cost contracts to DMW ESP subcontractors, and 80% on our professional services and soft costs. And that was really driven by Carlton Hearts identifying as an ESP at the time of contracting. Then in operations, we don't have our 2023 numbers out yet. And so the number that we're reporting here is from 2022, but is an NHA-wide outcome for that. And be happy to circle back once we have our 2023 numbers calculated and available. But Bremick did note that in order to achieve these numbers, they really worked hard pretty early on in the project prior to bid to get a lot of phone calls out and a lot of open houses to meet with subcontractors and interest them in the jobs, presenting both at OAME and PBDG in order to get the word out and work with contractors. They also, because this was two buildings, they worked to actually split the contracts for subcontractors so that individuals could choose to work on, or companies could choose to work on one building and not both, if that worked better in terms of their availability or staffing and labor availability to try and make it more accessible to other and additional firms. Next slide, please. And continuing on in the successes that Bremick had, you can see here the percentage of apprentice and journey level hours that they had achieved on the property and the project. And again, they attributed to this to a lot of early outreach. And that concludes our presentation here. Are there any questions or comments or thoughts?
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. We will go one by one. Let's start with Susan. Questions, comments, thoughts?
Well,
it is your namesake.
Yeah, I have to. It is a beautiful building. I got a chance to tour it with Baker and Trell, the director of Northwest Housing Alternatives, and the architects. And I would say one thing that really struck me about it's Brian Carlton, right? Yeah, that's his first name. Is he, you know, he's been doing this for 30 years. And so he said over that time, they've really learned a lot about, you know, what to put into a building and everything they've learned, trial and error, and, you know, the whole thing about moisture and, you know, the outside of the walls and everything they put into this project. And so I think it's become more standard now, but I'm just delighted that there are heat pumps, which means a studio apartment. They're going to have air conditioning, you know, in the summer, which, you know, typically we didn't have years ago as we were building these buildings. There is, as Baker said, there's wonderful light in the building. And that's also very important to me that people have that light. So Northwest Pilot Project filled the South Building, permanent supportive housing, and the target was chronically homeless people. So, you know, to fulfill that goal in our community, and they have case managers on site. So, yeah, I'm I'm excited about it. I've lived in my apartment for 44 years in Northwest Portland. And, you know, I never wanted a building that was named after me, but if there was ever a building, I'm very happy it's this one, to think that there are other seniors who are going to be able to live in this beautiful neighborhood where so much has been gentrified, so much is expensive. So yeah, it's all good.
Awesome. Awesome. Thank you very much. Todd.
Just a question about the bilingual service providers. Can you tell me a little bit more? What language are they providing services in? It looked like from the demographics, the biggest slices were native and I think that was it. I don't know. I guess I'm trying to recall the slide, but yeah, if you just tell me a little bit more about that relationship, that'd be great.
Our property manager is bilingual, actually, in Spanish and English.
Okay.
I can tell you about
Thank you very much. I don't know. Baker, was there any more to go with that?
Oh, I couldn't tell you about multilingual services actually on site. I know that documents get translated when there's a need, but I couldn't speak to the actual case manager's language proficiency.
Okay, I don't have anything. Just a comment to say, like, yeah, it's a beautiful project, and thank you so much for all the hard work. Appreciate it.
Alan.
Thank you, Dr. Volk. And thanks, Baker. My question is sort of along the lines of Todd's. I have one specific question about the project and one kind of general comment. The specific question is, I noticed the piece where you switched out the PSH provider from NAIA to, that just slipped my mind. Who did you switch your PSH provider to? Northwest Pilot Project, of course. Yeah, I'm just curious if there have been any differences in that aspect of the project when you switch those two partners out.
So thank you. So Northwest Pilot and NAIA were originally going to both be PSH providers, okay. And they were going to split the residents that they were working with in the building. I think it was about 2/3 and 1/3. And so Northwest Pilot has always been involved in the project. I think it was actually Susan and Northwest Pilot that involved NHA from the beginning in this piece of land here and the development. So they've been integral from the beginning. Then after and through the lease-up process, NAIA decided to step back from the project, and Northwest Pilot was able to bring in additional staffing to cover those households as well, that in addition to the ones they were going to work with originally.
Thank you. Yeah, I appreciate that, because it seemed like Northwest Pilot Project is sort of the natural provider in this development. I just thought that was an interesting point that was made. I didn't know the history, so I appreciate that. And the other kind of general point I'll make is related to the DMWESB contracting, and I'll channel former Commissioner Hardesty. And I really appreciate you pointing out that Carlin Hart was the major soft cost provider for the, particularly the ESB part. And then we noted here that Carlin Hart has been in the industry for 30 years. This isn't a commentary on Carlin Hart. I think they're a fantastic provider. But I think there's value in us disaggregating when we're trying to reach the kind of goals that we're trying to reach with these, related to particularly minority and women contractors. We see the impact of that in the next slide when we talk about workforce diversity, and we're talking specifically about people of color in those programs and women in those programs, very much more targeted about what we're trying to accomplish there in some way. So that's just a general comment, not necessarily your project, but just overall about how we disaggregate that information. Thanks.
Thanks, Alan. Well stated, and very important point. Appreciate your presentation. I think there's no more questions for this team. Good work, and excited about what it's going to provide for in the future.
Thank you all for your time and support.
Yeah, thank you. Back to our agenda. We need to talk about the future of the Bond Oversight Committee. We've come to an interesting point. All of the projects are outlined. All of the monies are committed. And so what does this mean going forward? Gina, I believe you're going to help us think through that. We do have quorum to make determinations.
Thank you, Dr. Holt. Good morning, everybody. My name is Gina Scott, she, her pronouns. I'm the Risk Analysis Compliance Manager. My team, the bulk of our work is to monitor the ongoing compliance with the projects, and that includes tenant compliance, making sure that tenants are under the income limits required for the projects, and that the rents are lowered to what they need to be. We also look at property compliance and then financial compliance for any projects that have loans on them. So we do this every year, look at the projects. We also collect resident service data because we want to know about the programs that are run each year and have the successes and challenges for those programs. So I'm coming to you today to see what the future of the Bond Oversight Committee will look like. As Danelle and Angel said, all the funds have been committed. We exceeded our unit goals by 43%. And we're at a point where we're moving forward. And I wanted to explore whether having a quarterly bond committee was still necessary. So if you could go to the next slide, please. So the Bond Oversight Committee charter and protocols says the Bond Oversight Committee's role is to monitor revenues, expenditures, and program project implementation in accordance with the framework plan, review program priorities, spending, and financial plans, oversee the administrative and financial aspects of the bond with assistance from staff from the OMF, city attorney, and the PHB, track metrics in the implementation of the bond against the PHB's adopted racial equity plan. Next slide, please. Monitor utilization of DMWESB to support community benefits. If needed, make recommendations to City Council to refine the policy framework plan. Oversee annual financial and performance reporting to be used to provide data for annual community forums, and provide an annual report to City Council. Next slide, please. So I thought we could open up the room for the Bond Oversight Committee members to have a discussion. First question is, have these 8 items been satisfied to your minds? Are there any concerns about disbanding the BOC? Are there any program or project updates that would be useful after disbandment, and at what frequency? As I said, my team monitors the ongoing compliance, and we are looking at these projects, and it would be very easy for us to provide a documentation or reports or something on a smaller level. And then, are we ready for a motion to disband the BOC?
Well, Jean, can I take us through each one and give us a moment to dialogue? Excellent. Let's look at the first one. Has these 8 items been satisfied? Alan, Todd, Susan, what say you? You can unmute, interact. Yeah, Todd.
Sure. I guess to my thought is like yes. Things have been satisfied. I guess I'm going kind of strictly to like what's the worst case scenario, where it seems like there's still one project in pre-development or in development, and then one and a few in construction. So if what happens if we find out, I'm not expecting this, but like the lease up process or construction is not meeting the OWESB targets or the racial equity plan in terms of like how the outcomes are for like lease up for the stages that are still yet to happen. But I feel like we have limited influence on that. Even I guess we hear a project report and that's it. So happy to just do that from that context. So yeah.
Thank you, Susan. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I just want to apologize for being absent over the last year and explain to Todd and Alan, and thank you for all your service. At first, I missed the February meeting last year because I had a death in my family and I had to travel. But basically, I'm the co-chair of this Metro Oversight Committee for the Support of Housing Services, and we have abundant meetings, and I'm missing a meeting today to be here, but they're on Thursday. So I had said over the summer, I was going to have to regretfully resign from this committee just because of the conflict of the meeting schedule. And it's quite arduous. It's like having a half-time job I'm not being paid for. Not complaining. You know, I'll volunteer. But so I don't feel like I'm as well situated to answer these. But they wanted me here, you know, so you had quorum in case you decided that it would be appropriate to have a motion to disband. Well, but thanks, if you're going to continue, I think you'd have to replace me. I'm sorry to say that. I think it's been a great committee.
I appreciate that. Alan, your thoughts?
Well, there's a couple things in there, Susan. One is there's no way we can replace you, so we're not even going to try. And the second is I think you actually provide the definition for retirement, right, is working like a half-time job and not getting paid for it. That's the very definition of being retired, I think, so. I want to go back to what Todd said also, and I agree with what Todd said. The answer is to the eight is yes, and the question is to what extent have we met some of these, right? We get the project updates and the financial updates. So my questions are around numbers 2 and 4, the program priorities, and particularly for those of us that have been involved since that early community stakeholder group. Right? Have we met those priorities that have come forward from the community stakeholders? And you know, again, my sense is, yeah, we have. It's been great hearing from the project teams and the work that they're doing to meet those goals. It'd be nice to see it quantified over time at some point. And same with number 4, you know, how do we compare against the racial equity plan? I'm all for not meeting quarterly. I did have the same concern as Todd, particularly about Hollywood Hub. It's like if it doesn't get funded, do we have to get the band back together and figure some stuff out or what? So I don't know if that makes a difference or not, but I otherwise feel pretty good about where we are and you know just continuing updates, you know, particularly on how we're meeting some of the goals would serve what I think is needed from here moving forward.
Thank you very much. So let's go right to it. Do we feel like we're ready for a motion to disband the BOC? Todd?
Another question I have, sorry.
Sorry? Who
sorry,
else was?
That was me, ahead. Dr. Yeah. Alan. It's Alan, okay. Sorry about that.
Yeah.
One thing I wasn't sure about was, would there need to be continued annual reports to city council if we disbanded this committee, or is that part of the bond, and would we need to be involved in that? So I don't know about that specific aspect.
Gina, I think that would be to you.
And Hill has his hand raised, so maybe he wants to answer it.
Oh, I couldn't see. And yeah. We can go to the gallery view.
I'm not going to answer the question. I'm just want to share a thought that as part of the board oversight committee, it's important to be stewards about how the money has been spent, and we are still spending it. And as part of that, we have annual audits. And I think that we should keep the board, the oversight committee, communicated about the outcomes of the spending of the entire bond. So I think, I don't know how frequent it should have the meetings, but I think it's important to make sure that as soon as the bond is fully spent is when the oversight committee should be completed their responsibilities. That's just
I appreciate that, Arnel. Do we have a projected idea around that completion date? Is it going to be within the next quarter? Do we think it'll be 2 quarters out? Do we know? I know that the Hollywood Hub is a contingency that's hanging in the air.
Stay on one microphone. In terms of final spend out, Hollywood Hub, if it gets underway in September, they're tracking for a late 2026
completion. Probably final release of our funds sometime in 2027. So it is a little ways out still.
Appreciate that. Thank you very much.
I'm going to circle back to Alan's question. Next steps would be to talk to Commissioner Rubio, and we would probably continue with the annual report. What that looks like, I know we've had committee members help present that report. So what it looks like will be to be seen. And then like Angel said, we do have the continued bond audit. And all 2 years, there have been no findings. It's just been some recommendations for improvements. And so it's been a positive audit for the last 2 years.
Susan, your hand.
Did the staff have a recommendation about whether they think we should put a motion forward to disband? Is there a staff opinion about this?
We all have our own opinions. We don't have a collective opinion. I wanted to kind of leave it up to you, the committee, to see what your desires are. If Susan, you said you clearly don't can't continue if the bond oversight committee continues. You'd have to resign. And I know Alan just retired. Like to free up some of his time, but again, it's completely up to the committee. We all have our opinions, but you're leading the show on this.
I mean, I guess I could say that if Todd and Alan feel like the committee doesn't need to meet as frequently, but does need to continue a while longer to see resolution on Hollywood Hub, and if I knew far enough in advance, I could try to be at the meeting. I don't know about Annalise's future. And I don't know, is Stephen Green, does he ever attend anymore or intermittently?
Great question. He has been intermittent. We had a dialogue about the infrequency, and he expressed a desire to continue to Molly, the prior interim director. So,
okay. I mean, I could try to, be there to provide you a quorum if you decided, if it wasn't quarterly, but and I had a lot of advance warning. I just held the metro folks.
I'd be happy to provide a little bit of input. The commissioner has asked the department to review all of our boards and commissions. So we're taking a look at sort of all of those commissions right now. And I think we're going to make some recommendations in anticipation of the way the government is being sort of changed in Portland, overhauled, but by June. So I would anticipate by June, we're gonna start to see some recommendations. So there might be a natural timeline for dissolution by mid-year, if that's helpful.
That is helpful, thank you. Todd?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I want to be sensitive to Angel's point where it's going to be a while we're spending this money down. I also don't think we need to meet quarterly. Do we have to do council updates annually while these things are being spent? Do we know the answer to that? If we don't, I guess if we do have to do it, I would propose that we just meet annually. To prepare, like even for like a half an hour or an hour, to just give that update to city council, and then that way we can have at least a touch point of how have the racial equity goals been followed. So that's kind of my thought off the top of my head. I definitely don't think we need to meet quarterly anymore.
Well, when you said annually, I saw Alan give a thumbs up. Looked like it was a good idea to have Alan. I see you unmuted.
Yeah, I'd say the same thing. Something frequency like annually, and again, it's hard to imagine, that it's such a long period of time. Because the other thing we could, is stay together as a group. And then if the Bureau needs to call us together to say, let's say something has come up and we need to be together, we could also do that. Or we could, I don't know if our charter or bylaws allow us to meet, you know, by email, for instance, if you needed some input on something that was going on or just wanted to update us on what was going on and wanted to have that pathway available.
So are we ready to entertain a motion then around an approach? Understanding that as the city is being revamped, there may be an adjustment that happens that's kind of given to the committee. But in the meantime, as things stand, is there a motion on the floor that someone wants to recommend?
I move to annual check-ins in advance of council reports.
Okay. Moved. Any second?
Second.
All right. It's been moved and seconded. Those who are in favor of going to a annual reporting, please indicate by saying, I agree. Susan?
I agree.
Awesome. Todd?
Okay. That was my motion. I guess I agree, but I guess I just want to confirm, Susan, like an annual timeline would be okay with your schedule?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'll make it work. Just yeah.
Okay. Then
as long as I advance notice. Yeah.
Okay. Just wanted to just check because I have to get your confirmation. Okay. Thank you.
Alan?
I agree.
Awesome. Awesome. So we will be transitioning to an annual kind of point of connectivity. Sounds great. Thanks. Gina, anything else on this?
No, I just want to say if you want any specific information on the properties, as I said, we continue to monitor them every year. So between my team, the communications team, and the data team, we can kind of pull any data sets you want and reports at any time. So just gina.scott@portlandoregon.gov. Just send me an email and we can provide ongoing information throughout the year.
Thank you very much, Todd. I see your hand up.
Yeah, I guess before we disbanded, I've been meaning to kind of ping Alan and Susan here for the last few months. I just haven't done it yet. But one thing that I've been having an idea around is writing an op-ed to describe our experience on this oversight committee and the bond as a whole. I think we get a lot of media around things that are going wrong with housing and our public projects. And I think, you know, I share Susan's sentiment that I think this was a well-run project or well-run, you know, civic project that, you know, I think Portlanders should have pride in, and that we can still do hard things. And, you know, it feels like swimming upstream most days, but, you know, I think, so I'll just leave it there. I'll say like, I'll invite Alan and Susan and Annalise and Steven, if he wants to join, but think about drafting up an op-ed and putting it out into the world, maybe with the support of PHB.
I think that's an excellent idea and I'd be happy to sign on. I remember one year, and it wasn't last year because I didn't participate, but it might've been the year before where four of us, with Annalise, Todd, Alan, we each bit off a part of what we were going to report. And I was always more the human side, the voice of the people who we were serving, because you guys understood the technical issues. But I made the comment that it was the best committee I'd ever served on. And I remember Commissioner Ryan was quite taken aback by that, you know, given. But what I said is that I thought, it was so transparent, the information between us citizens, what we asked and what PHB staff responded. And I remember asking at one point, one of Shannon or Stacey or Tanya, you know, are we asking too many questions? Are we those kind of pestery people? They said, no, you know, it's great that Todd and Ellen, they're so well-informed and they drill down. And so, yeah. I think it has been an excellent experience. And I won't say in public right now what the experience has been on the Metro Oversight Committee, but it's been vastly different. So this has been a very focused group, a very informed group. And those of you who were part of the original stakeholders and that framework and what Alan and Todd kept referring back to the framework. And that was so helpful to me. So yes, I think that's a great idea.
Yeah, thanks for bringing that forward, Todd. I agree. I think the one thing that there's a couple things that that would really be interesting to think about in the context of that. One is, will there be another Portland bond measure, or is there another metro bond measure? So we don't know that. There might be some context there to think about. Would it be in support of something that is next? The other is the other piece of context for us to think about is how much, for lack of a better word, noise there is out there about things that aren't going well, as you said, and particularly, and I think a lot of citizens don't have the ability to not conflate those things together, right? They don't necessarily know the successes of the PHB affordable housing bond measure versus others that may not be faring as well right now. And so it'd be interesting to think about whether or not bringing our voices forward would help clarify that or conflate it more. But I think it's always worth tuning the horn.
Excellent. I agree. The story needs to be told for sure. Tell me, I saw that you turned your video on. Were you going to make a comment at all? Okay, wonderful. Oh, Todd, your hand.
Sure. Just, I guess, to sort of put a point on next steps. And I was thinking about the mechanics of this, and I think it would probably be helpful to have support from PHB's communications team to get the word out. But I just don't want to lose sight that I think, going back to Alan's point about what's next, I feel like I would want to focus on just the success of this project and the civic nature of having trust in our institutions more than like setting us up politically for future bonds. But I guess I'm happy to work, and I think I also want to be sensitive to like there might be future bonds as well. So just thinking that off the top of my head. Thank you.
Any other closing thoughts? Staff,
PHB? Sorry, just does that work? PHB communication, like, can I ping? Okay, go ahead.
In the room, yeah.
Yeah, this is Megan. I did just want to touch base. We will be presenting the bond annual report likely in May this year. So I will be in touch with the committee members about if you are looking to participate or how you would like to participate. And I know, Dr. Holt, you were part of that last year as well. So I will be in touch about that presentation to City Council.
Awesome. A question from Todd to PHB's communications team, is that request a doable? Is that a connecting possibility?
Yes, and I can make that connection for you all to Gabriel, our communications
manager. Awesome. Angel.
I just want to say that being part of this team recently, less than 2 years, I'm really proud about all the work that you have done. It's so beautiful, all the buildings that we have been building up. I know the need is so big, but what we are doing is changing lives for good. And we should continue doing it in the best way that we can. But I just want to point out that I'm so proud about the oversight committee and also for the staff in the Bureau, because the work that we are doing every day is so beautiful.
Yeah, thanks for that comment. Appreciate it. I get an opportunity, I guess, to wrap up our time together. And I have had the privilege of being a part of the entire development, the onboarding of this process, and doing some of the strategic work to help stand up the work and be supportive kind of in the in-between. It's been an interesting journey. We started, there were some rickety spaces in the start, and there were some challenges we had to work through and define some things and get to a point of rhythm. And then we did hit stride, and that's what's so amazing about what happens. What a true testimony to how things work, that the beginnings are always full of their own nuanced challenges. But if you stick with it, stay committed, there's a great possibility of getting to a place of not only meeting your goals, but exceeding them. To think about exceeding the numbers by 43% is pretty amazing. It really, really is amazing. And then to do it within budget and to do it within the timeline. So I want to express appreciation to the PHB staff and their responsiveness and being willing to take on and be in uncomfortable spaces, because they've had to do both. and to the Bond Oversight Committee to be committed to carry this thing to the finish line. That's tremendous. It's been good working together. One of the more fun spaces that TriExcellence has been able to show up in. So with that being said, everybody, take care of yourselves. Enjoy your Thursday, and we'll see you soon or in a year.
Thank you all.
Bye-bye.